I think I'm going to need full protection here too. Probably for this. This is she who can take some meter. That's one. Vacha vegan, Manas Kora vegan, Jiva vegan, Pujaro Pasta vegan, Itan vegan, Yo Vishahita Gira, Sarvam Apinam Itivin Sasishya. Translation. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Report. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 1st chapter, verses 9 and 10, Parikshit Maharaj placed a number of intelligent questions before Shukadeva Goswami. One of these questions was, why do people undergo atonement if they cannot control their senses? For instance, a thief may know perfectly well that he may be arrested for his stealing, and he may actually even see a thief arrested by the police, yet he continues to steal. Experience is gathered by hearing and seeing. One who is less intelligent gathers experience by seeing, and one who is more intelligent gathers experience by hearing. When an intelligent person hears from the law books and shastras, the scriptures, that stealing is not good, and hears that a thief is punished when arrested, he refrains from theft. A less intelligent person may first have to be arrested and punished for stealing to learn to stop stealing. However, a rascal, a foolish man, may have the experience of both hearing and seeing, and may even be punished, still he continues to steal. Even if such a person atones and is punished by the government, he will again commit theft as soon as he comes out of jail. If punishment in jail is considered atonement, what is the benefit of such atonement? Thus, Parikshit Maharaj inquired, Yashta Shutabhyam Yatpapam Jahanam Apyat Nohitam Karoti Bhuyo Vivasha Vayaschitam Ato Katam Kvachin Nivartite Bhadrat Kvachich Charititat Puna Vayaschitam Ato Patam Manye Kunjaras Chabat. He compared atonement to an elephant's bathing. The elephant may take a very nice bath in the river, but as soon as it comes onto the bank, it throws dirt all over its body. What then is the value of its bathing? Similarly, many spiritual practitioners chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and at the same time commit many forbidden things, thinking that their chanting will counteract offenses. Of the 10 types of offenses one can commit, chanting the holy name of the Lord, this offense is called Namno Balad Yasmehi Papa Buddhi, committing sinful activities in the strength of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Similarly, certain Christians go to church to confess their sins, thinking that confessing their sins before a priest and performing some penance will relieve them from the results of their weekly sins. As soon as Saturday is over and Sunday comes, they again begin their sinful activities, expecting to be forgiven the next Saturday. This kind of prayaschitta, or atonement, is condemned by Parikshit Maharaj, the most intelligent king of his time. Shukadeva Goswami, equally intelligent as befitting the spiritual master of Maharaj Parikshit, answered the king and confirmed that his statement concerning atonement was correct. A sinful activity cannot be counteracted by a pious activity. Thus real prayaschitta, atonement, is the awakening of our dormant Krishna consciousness. Real atonement involves coming to real knowledge, and for this there is a standard process. For one follows the regulated hygienic process, he does not fall sick. A human being is meant to be trained according to certain principles to revive his original knowledge. Such a methodical life is described as tapasya. One can be gradually elevated to the standard of real knowledge or Krishna consciousness, practicing austerity, celibacy, brahmacharya, by controlling the mind, by controlling senses, by giving up one's possessions and charity, by being avowedly truthful, by keeping clean, and by practicing yoga asanas. However, if one is fortunate enough to get the association of a pure devotee, he can easily surpass all the practices for controlling the mind by the mystic yoga process simply by following the records of principles of Krishna consciousness, refraining from illicit sex, leaving intoxication and gambling, and by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master. This easy process is being recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami. The verse speaks about restriction, restraint, and Srila Prabhupada takes the opportunity to speak about verses from the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in reference to the story of Vajamya. Many of us, I'm sure, are familiar with the story of Vajamya. Jamil had been born in a Brahminical family, practiced Brahminical life in his youth. He was very strict. The vows he was following, he was keeping. Yet he encountered in the course of one of his walks a low-class man embracing a low-class woman. And when he saw this, his mind and his senses fell from the standard which he had been following. He became attracted to the prostitute and became so attracted to her that gradually, in the course of time, he decided to live his life with the prostitute, married her, fathered many children, and throughout his life, the rest of his life, he gave up his political practices and began to engage in all kinds of sinful activities in order to maintain his family, dealing with intoxication. And by all external appearances, he appeared to be a very degraded person. In fact, Bhagavatam describes that he continued to have relations with his wife even in his elderly age, age of 80. He's fathered a child, and that youngest child, as we know, he had given the name of Narayan.
Where is it?
Such a good name. And he was very attached to this young son, his name was Narayan, and the time, destined time, had been approaching, for Ajameel to give up his life. And just as he was about to give up his life, he was calling out his son, whose name was Narayan. And at that particular time, as the Bhagavatam describes, generally the Vishnudut, or the Yamadutas come, excuse me. The Yamadutas are the representatives of Yamaraj, who comes, and he has his representatives who come, who take the subtle body of the person who's committed all kinds of sinful activities, and he is taken to give appropriate punishment for the sinful activities he's committed throughout his life. And in fact, the story of Ajameel was explained by Śrīla Śukadeva Goswami to Parīkṣit Maharaj, because in the previous discussion that they were having in the fifth canto of Śrīmad Bhāgavatam, Śukadeva Goswami had given a very elaborate description to Parīkṣit Maharaj about the different types of hellish planets there are in the lower planetary systems and the different types of punishment one has to accept as a result of sinful activities committed in one's life. As we know that the human form of life, in many places Śrīla Prabhupāda explains that the human form of life is a very responsible life. It's a junction from the lower forms of life, where the human form of life, the living entity, can either elevate himself by proper use of his life, or he can degrade himself by misuse of his life. And by engaging in sinful activities, he has to accept the concomitant reactions for those sins. Even if he may apparently have engaged in pious activities, still both must be accepted. And therefore, Ajameel, when Parīkṣit Maharaj, asked a question to Śukadeva Goswami, he asked, how can people avoid having to be punished in this way in the hellish planets of life? Hellish planets. And Śukadeva Goswami considered it to be a very good question. And Śrīla Prabhupāda explains in his commentaries that Parīkṣit Maharaj was asking the question for the benefit of others. Parīkṣit Maharaj certainly knew, being a very great saintly king, who was devoid of sinful activities, was not asking on his own account, but because he could understand that many people would hear the recitation of this Bhagavatam of Śukadeva Goswami in the future. Out of his compassion, he asked this question so that others could benefit and learn how to avoid having to suffer in this way by having to accept punishment for sinful, activities. And then, after asking that question, Śukadeva Goswami, in response to Parīkṣit Maharaj, he explained that the proper method to counteract the reactions of sinful life is to engage in Paryāścita, or atonement. Atonement means to perform some pious activity which will counteract the effects of the sinful activity so that one does not have to suffer the reactions. Prabhupada gives different examples in his commentaries to that section of the Bhagavatam of different references given in the Manu Samhita. For instance, in the Manu Samhita it is stated that for a person who has killed a person, a proper Paryāścita atonement is to be properly punished in this life, so he doesn't have to accept, according to the Manu Samhita, the reactions in his next life. And when Śukadeva Goswami gave this answer to Parīkṣit Maharaj, that Paryāścita atonement is the best method to avoid having to accept the reactions of sinful life, Parīkṣit Maharaj, being an intelligent being, he offered some counter-argument to the statement made by Śukadeva Goswami. One may ask, how can the disciple, Parīkṣit Maharaj, who is a disciple of Śukadeva Goswami, how could the disciple offer counter-argument to his spiritual master? But nonetheless, we understand that Śukadeva Goswami was testing Parīkṣit Maharaj to see what kind of a disciple he actually was. And therefore he explained that atonement, first he explained that atonement is the best way to avoid having to be punished for sinful activities. And Prabhupada brings up in his verse today, and it's also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that prayaschitta, or atonement, is not real atonement, because although one may atone for one's past sinful activities and try to counteract it by performing some pious activity, the problem is that if the desire still remains in the heart, and he gives the example just like the elephant. An elephant goes into the river, takes its bath, comes out of the river and throws dirt on itself. What is the value of such bathing? In the same way, I probably give the example of the professional sinner who goes to church, he commits sinful activities, and he understands by committing sinful activities, he wants to counteract, so he doesn't have to suffer, so he goes to confession. He confesses in church his sinful activities. He thinks, now I've been cleared, and now that I've been cleared, I've achieved my real objective. I can enjoy again and not have to reap the fruits, take the consequences by going to church again and confessing for my sins. And in this way, still, what happens is that although he may perform some atonement, such as going to church and confessing, still, as long as the sinful desire seed is still there within the heart, still he becomes subject to have to be punished again at some point in the future. So, therefore, when Shukadeva Goswami heard this when Pariksit Maharaj heard this explanation from Shukadeva Goswami, he said, I have a difficult time accepting this process of atonement as to be the actual solution to the problem. And therefore he gave these different examples, like the elephant taking his bath. And he said, as long as the desire is there within the heart, the proclivity, the propensity, will be there to commit sins again. So as long as one has, and Prabhupada gives the example, just like a person that he may hear that stealing is bad, an intelligent person hears that stealing is bad, and because he hears that stealing is bad, he won't steal. He may see others who've committed theft and they are punished, and he hears how they're punished, and he may think, oh, I don't want to be punished in that way. An intelligent person, he won't steal. He said, but a less intelligent person, he may hear, he may see, still, he may steal. And he may have to be punished. And somebody who is even less intelligent, even after being punished, which is the atonement, punishment, he goes out and steals again. What is the value of such atonement if the propensity to continue to commit theft is still there? In fact, in the Bhakti Rasa Samhita, that the root cause of all suffering in this world is avidya, or ignorance. And he says, as long as ignorance is there of one's real spiritual identity, due to ignorance, he commits sinful activities, he engages in papa, some sinful activity. Actually, he gives a whole circular explanation about what happens due to ignorance. He commits some sinful activity, and the result of that sinful activity, he gets both what's called prarabdha karma and aparabdha karma. Prarabdha karma means that he has to accept in this life some reaction due to past sinful activities. It's explained by Rupa Goswami, and Prabhupada elaborates on it in the Nectar of Ocean. Such he has to take a low birth, or he has to some legal implications life, or some serious disease. This is called prarabdha karma. It's manifest reaction. And then there's two types of reactions. One is prarabdha karma, and the other is aparabdha karma. And aparabdha karma means that it's lying a seed, lying dormant, waiting to fructify at some point in the future. And not only does it lie dormant, waiting to fructify, but the reaction, the prarabdha karma, is lying dormant, waiting to fructify. But also,
another form of potential future suffering is the proclivity to engage in sins again. Because as long as the proclivity to engage in sinful activities again, even though one may counteract the sinful activities, as long as the proclivity is there, this is called kutam. Kutam means a particular proclivity. The analogy or example is given, just like kutam could be like that one takes birth in this life with a proclivity for stealing. He has a proclivity for it, the tendency, he likes to steal. It's there, and that proclivity, unless it's uprooted, unless it's gone, eventually what happens, it manifests in the form of bijam, which is a seed of a desire to perform a particular sinful activity, a theft. And then, after the theft is the seed, the bijam is there, then of course it manifests as either prarabdha karma, whereas one gets punished, either in this life or in the next life, or the example of the thief, he gets punished, he goes to prison, and then if he goes to prison and still the proclivity to engage in theft or the proclivity for sinful reactions is still there within the heart, the result is that even though he's gone to prison, or even though he's been punished for his sinful activities, he'll do it again. How is this, therefore, Parikshit Maharaj is challenging Shukadeva Goswami, rightfully so, and of course Shukadeva Goswami is very pleased by the intelligent reaction from his disciple, that my disciple understands that I was testing him. He's not accepting my explanation that this type of atonement is adequate. And therefore, being pleased with Parikshit Maharaj's response to the statement of Shukadeva Goswami, he then goes on and gives another explanation. And his other explanation, let's see, it's in a sixth canto, it's knowledge, achievement of knowledge, I believe it is. Yes. Parikshit Maharaj says, sometimes one who is very alert so as not to commit sinful acts is victimized by sinful life again. I therefore consider this process of repeated sinning and atoning to be useless. It is like the bathing of an elephant, for an elephant cleanses itself by taking a full bath, but then throws dust over its head and body as soon as it returns to the land. Then Shukadeva Goswami said, okay, my dear king, since acts meant to neutralize impious actions are also fruitive, they will not release one from the tendency to act fruitively. In fact, there is an analogy in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni speaking to King Prachinabharishad. And he compares that the person who tries to counteract fruitive activities by engaging in another fruitive activity, he says it's like a person who tries to counteract a bad dream with hallucination. King, he said, put this back on. Did somebody give me this microphone? Yeah, you did. It's not on.
It hasn't been on since the beginning. So.
It's a wireless mic. Oh, it's on. What does that mean?
It's connected to that, and it's on Facebook.
It's connected there,
yeah.
But it's not connected to me. Yeah? It should be there, right? Okay. Where was I? King Prachinabharishad, yes. One cannot counteract the effects of a bad dream by another hallucination. He says, similarly, one who cannot counteract the... He says that one cannot counteract a fruitive activity by another fruitive activity. Oh, Prabhupada also gives a simple analogy. He says, just like a person might try to counteract a heavy weight of burden he was carrying it on his shoulder by putting it on the other shoulder. You know, it may
temporarily relieve the weight of the burden from one shoulder, but he's only put it on the other shoulder. In the same way, one who tries to counteract the reactions of fruitive activity by another fruitive activity is like a person who has a bad dream. And it's like you may have a bad dream, and you wake up from the bad dream and it's pitch dark. You can't see anything. And in the pitch dark, you look off in the distance and you see the curtain moving, or you think you see the curtain moving, or you hear the curtain moving. And then from a hallucination that you have from the curtain moving, again, it's like waking from a bad dream to a hallucination is still problematic. So therefore, he says, the real accomplishment is that one has to wake up to Krishna consciousness if one wants to relieve himself from the reactions to fruitive activities. So here he's saying that, my dear king, since acts meant to neutralize impious actions are also fruitive, they will not release one from the tendency to act fruitively. Why are they fruitive? They're fruitive because a person is thinking, I don't want to suffer. How can I avoid suffering? Well, of course, it's natural to think like that. I don't want to suffer. Most people try to avoid suffering. And Prahlad Maharaj gives the example when he's speaking to his classmates in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's telling his young 5-year-old friends, he says, in the material world, every materialist is endeavoring for happiness, and he's trying to mitigate his distress, and therefore he's acting accordingly. He says, one cannot be happy as long as one tries to counteract his... as long as one endeavors for the happiness in this way, immediately he creates his conditions for future distress. In other words, when one tries to counteract his suffering by engaging in some fruitive activity, he's creating all his conditions for more suffering in the future. Or as the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Tasyaiva heto prayateta kovido na labhite yad prabhatam upadhyada ta labhite dukavad anyata sukham kalena sabhatra kabira rangasa. That persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined, they should not endeavor for that happiness which is available from the highest planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, Patalaloka, because they know that as far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it comes automatically in due course of time, just as in due course of time, misery comes without asking for it. Bhagavatam states that this is an intelligent person. He doesn't endeavor for these things because he knows it comes, just like misery comes without asking for it. We often give this example of this verse that an intelligent person should know that misery comes without asking for it. Nobody wakes up in the morning and thinks, what can I do today to suffer? It's just most intelligent person don't think like that. Or neither do they make a list of all the things they can do to suffer it today or suffer in the future. They don't plan for it, but it comes. So the intelligent person knows that just as suffering comes without planning or asking for it, in the same way enjoyment comes without planning or asking for it. Therefore, Bhagavatam states the intelligent person doesn't endeavor for either, because he knows that as far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it comes automatically in due course of time, just as in due course of time misery comes without asking for it. So, boy, for what does an intelligent person do? An intelligent person understands that just as distress will come of its own accord and happiness will come of its own accord, an intelligent person understands that he should endeavor to satisfy the Lord and become free from the reactions to sinful life. So here it says that persons who subject themselves to the rules and regulations of atonement are not at all intelligent. Indeed, they are in the mode of darkness. Unless one is freed from the mode of ignorance, trying to counteract one action through another is useless because this will not uproot one's desires. Thus, even though one may superficially seem pious, he will undoubtedly be prone to act impiously. Therefore, somebody's calling you and telling you the microphone's not working. True?
No.
No, okay. It's working?
It was working. I mean, it's wireless, right? I just increased the volume.
Increase the volume.
Yeah.
Expert. He's calling to tell you it's too loud now. Thus, even though one may superficially seem pious, he will undoubtedly be prone to act impiously. Therefore, real atonement is enlightenment and perfect knowledge, Vedanta, by which one understands the Supreme Absolute Truth. And then, the next verse, he says, "My dear King, if a diseased person eats the pure, uncontaminated food prescribed by a physician, he is gradually cured, and the infection of disease can no longer touch him. Similarly, if one follows the regulative principles of knowledge, he gradually progresses toward liberation from material contamination." And then the next verse, a very well-known verse, which is stated, "Tapasa brahmachayena samena cha damena cha tyagena satya satya bhyan yamena niyamena va." And Shukadeva Goswami gives this example explaining this knowledge. One must concentrate the mind, observe a life of celibacy, undergo the austerity, voluntarily giving up enjoyment, control the mind and the senses, give charity, be truthful, clean, and nonviolent, follow regulative principles, engage in chanting of Vedic mantras. A sober and faithful person who knows the religious principles is temporarily purified of all sins performed with his body, words, and mind. These sins are like the dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burnt by fire, although their roots remain to grow again at the first opportunity. So then Shukadeva Goswami gives the example that these activities are what's recommended to avoid having to suffer. But the point that he is also making, that as long as the desire still remains within the heart, one can be temporarily freed from the reactions. Temporarily freed. And he says, like to control the mind and the senses, or give charity, truthful, clean, and nonviolent. He says, these sins are like dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burnt by fire, although their roots remain to grow again at first opportunity. Prabhupada also used to give the example that just like he said he gives the example just like a person who's weeding the garden. He may go into the garden, he may take the weeds and he may turn them under, and it looks like the garden is freed from all these weeds, but by turning them under, even though externally it appears to be clear, but because the seeds still lie below the surface, in due course of time they will come up again. But Prabhupada says, but a fried seed will not fructify. So fried seed is how to burn up. They burn up the prarabdha karma and uprarabdha karma, to burn it up in such a way that the seeds of sinful desires will no longer remain. And therefore, in the next verse, the conclusive statement which is made by Shukadeva Goswami is, Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agam dundvati kratsneha niharam eva bhaskaram. This is a rare person who's achieved devotional service to the Lord. He can uproot the weeds of sinful desires without any possibility of them ever reviving. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate the fog by its rays. So therefore, Shukadeva Goswami says that the best way, or the best atonement, is not simply to counteract in some way or to temporarily relieve the suffering in some way, but the best atonement is to uproot the seeds of sinful desires within the heart. Prabhupada many times would quote the verse from the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Vishaya vinivartante naraharasya dehina rasavajam rasopyasya param jishtvar navartate. That the embodied soul may restrict himself from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects still remains. but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he becomes fixed in consciousness. Therefore, of course, for many of us, sometimes we hear these verses, we hear this explanation given by Shukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. We hear the emphasis that Srila Prabhupada makes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and especially in the story of Ajamil. In fact, the story of Ajamil is such an important example of the potency of Krishna's holy name, and how that simply by, as we were explaining before, Ajamil, he committed his sinful activities throughout his life, and then when it was time for him to give up his body, Yamaraj and the Yamadutas came to take Ajamil to be for his suitable punishment to the hellish planets where he would have to suffer. But as we know, Ajamil, at the time of having to give up his body, because he was very attached to his young son Narayan, he was calling out in a helpless state of mind, Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. But not only was he calling out the name of Narayan, but he was doing it in an offenseless way, because he wasn't thinking, I'm calling my son's name to counteract my sinful activities. He wasn't thinking like that. That would have been improper. If he was thinking, I'm calling the name of Orion because if I call the name of Orion, the Yamadutas won't be able to take me away. He wasn't thinking that way. Therefore, it's explained that he was calling out in an offenseless way because he wasn't trying to counteract the sins. And because he was calling out the names of Narayan, and because he remembered the Supreme Lord Narayan by calling out those names, then although the Yamadutas had come to take Ajamil for his punishment, the Vishnu Dutas, or the representatives of Lord Vishnu, appeared there at the same time, and he stopped them. And the Vishnu Dutas began to explain to them, there's no need to take this this Ajamil to Yamaraj for punishment, because he has already atoned for his sins. And what is the value of punishing somebody? What is the value of punishing somebody if they've already atoned for their activities? What is the value of putting somebody in prison? Or what is the value of sending someone to the hellish planets if the propensity to commit those activities is already gone from the heart? And because the real purpose of punishment is to accomplish that. That is the purpose of punishment. But if it's already punished, then therefore the Vishnu Dutas began to explain that, why would Yamaraj want to do something like that to this Ajamil if he's already atoned for his sinful activities? And they convinced the Yamadutas that this person was no longer eligible to be punished for the hellish planets, because his atonement had already been accomplished by his offenselessly chanting the names of Narayan. Now, of course, as we understand that, as the explanation goes on about the story of Ajamil, although he was not taken by the Yamadutas, and the Yamadutas went back to Yamaraj, and they had a discussion with Yamaraj because they wanted to find out from Yamaraj, who were these four people who stopped us and represented an authority higher than you? And the Vishnu Dutas also, left that place, and Ajamil remained in the body. He didn't leave at that particular time. And it's described that Ajamil, because he heard the whole conversation between the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas, he understand he was given an extension, so to speak. I think we have published a book, BBT has published a book, they call it The Second Chance, what was it? Right? It was the story of Ajamil. He was given a second chance. And the second chance was because he heard the conversation between the Vishnu Dutas and Yama Dutas, and because he had chanted the names of Narayan offenselessly, and that he was not trying to counteract his sins, he was given another opportunity, and therefore he went to Hardwar. I think he went to Hardwar. Yes, he went to Hardwar, and he remained in the body. He went to Hardwar, and he completely dedicated the rest of his life fixed in devotional service, meditating on the Supreme Lord, worshipping the deities, chanting the holy names of the Lord, and that at a later point in his life, these four personalities, effulgent personalities, appeared before Ajambil, and again, for a second time, and this time, they took him back to Vaikuntha. Meanwhile, as we said back before, the Yamadutas, they were a little bit confused by what had happened to them in the presence of Ajamil, in the presence of the Vishnu Dutas. They went back to Yamaraj and they asked Yamaraj, "We've been your servants for such a long time. You appear to be completely independent. You appear to be supreme. We always considered you to be the supreme person. We didn't know that there was somebody higher than you. Yet these four effulgent personalities appeared to come and they stopped us in the strength of some authority, and they were trying to understand, who is this authority? Can there be two supreme lords?" And they were started to question is, if there's two supreme lords, then that means then either one and two, both of them have different decisions about the fate of a person according to his sinful activities. Either one will counteract the other, and neither will get punishment nor reward. Or if they come out with different decisions, they'll be both punished and rewarded. But this doesn't seem to make sense. Can you please explain, you know, what it is? You know, who are these persons, and actually, what is the criteria for a person to be taken for punishment? And, of course, Yamaraj went on to explain to the Yamadutas that he is subordinate to the Supreme Lord, and anyone who chants the holy name of the Lord offenselessly, he certainly is no longer considered to be a candidate for punishment, and therefore these representatives, the Vishnu Dutas, they deterred you, they stopped you from taking this Ajamil. And, of course, the whole essence of the pastime of Ajamil, which is given in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. And I even remember, I oftentimes cite this reference, although I never really spoke to anybody in the BBT, but I do remember when the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam came out. Previous to that, Srila Prabhupada was publishing first, second, third, fourth canto, fifth cantos. He was only publishing about 20,000 volumes of each. Each temple would get 20,000 volumes of the... The books would be distributed amongst all the temples, those 20,000 volumes of the Bhagavatam. But when Prabhupada did the sixth canto, then he printed it massive. I think the first printing was 100,000, then he printed another 100,000 again, and because of the story of Ajamil. Because the story of Ajamil felt was such an important story for the purpose of his mission and his movement, that the story of Ajamil is meant to illustrate the power and the effects of chanting the holy name of the Lord. That even especially taking into consideration who Srila Prabhupada was preaching to at that particular time, and people that were joining the movement, and how although they had been previously addicted to so many different kinds of sinful activities, Prabhupada's emphasis was that even those addicted to all kinds of sinful life can immediately become purified simply by chanting the holy names of the Lord. What is that? Prayena muniyo raja nivita? No. Prayena paisa sabakalavis? No, that's not it. What is it? The sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. I have it right in front of me, probably. Well, the chanting of the Hare Krishna, chanting of the holy name of the Lord is considered to be the ultimate religious principle of the living entity in human society. I forget the Sanskrit of that verse, but that's the translation. So, anyways, we hear in Shukadeva Goswami is giving this whole explanation, Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana, that a rare person who is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, he can uproot the weeds of sinful desires without any possibility of them reviving. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can dissipate the fog by its rays. So, therefore, and then the verses that come just after that are also very important. Kechit kevaliya bhakti vasudeva parayana agam. Yes, okay. And the next verse is, my dear king, if a sinful person engages in the service of a bona fide devotee of the Lord and thus learns how to dedicate his life unto the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be completely purified. One cannot be purified merely by undergoing austerity, penance, brahmacharya, and the other methods of atonement I have previously described. The path followed by pure devotees who are well behaved and fully endowed with the best qualifications is certainly the most auspicious path in this material world. It is free from fear, and it is authorized by the Shastras. My dear king, as a pot containing liquor cannot be purified even if washed in the waters of many rivers, non-devotees cannot be purified by processes of atonement, even if they perform them very well. Although not having fully realized Krishna, persons who have even once surrendered completely unto his lotus feet and who have become attracted to his name, form, qualities, and pastimes are completely freed of all sinful reactions, for they have thus accepted the true method of atonement. Even in dreams, such surrendered souls do not see Yamaraj or his order carriers who are equipped with ropes to bind the sinful. And then he goes on to explain this historical account of the story of Ajamil. So this point, of course, is very important. What is that verse? Tyaktva sattamam charanam bhujam hariya, in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni was speaking to Vyasadeva, and he was explaining what the importance of glorifying the Supreme Lord in his pastimes, glorifying the Supreme Lord's names and qualities in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was explaining that if one who forsakes his material occupation to engage in a devotional service of the Lord in this way, he may fall down in an immature stage, but there is never danger of his being unsuccessful. And in the next verse he states that, my dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna may fall down somehow or other, he will not become a fruitive worker again, because anyone who has at once relished the taste of Krishna's name, of Krishna's devotional service, he'll never be able to forget that ecstasy again and again. And Narada Muni was giving this as emphasis for Srila Vyasadeva's compilation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to give the living entities an opportunity to come direct contact with Krishna's pastimes, with Krishna's form, qualities, and in this way, by coming in direct contact with pure devotional service to the Lord, even though they may not complete in this life. And as this verse also says, that although not having fully realized Krishna, persons who have even once surrendered unto his lotus feet and who have become attracted to his name, form, qualities, and pastimes are freed from sinful reactions, for they have thus accepted the true method of atonement. Even in dreams, such surrendered souls do not see Yamaraj or his order carriers who are equipped with ropes to bind the sinful. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada extended such an important solution in his efforts to establish the Krishna consciousness movement, that in order to avoid the result that Ajamil apparently was destined to, in order to result that apparently so many other people are destined to by their commission of so many sinful activities in this life, in order to avoid the result of having to go to the hellish planets and having to be suffered, he understood that the best method to help the living entities to avoid the reactions of sinful life is that by giving them the best opportunity to come in contact with Krishna. Kali Kalera Dhamma Krishna Nama Sankirtan Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tari Pravatana, that the fundamental religious system in the age of Kali is the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Unless one has been empowered by the Lord, he cannot spread the Sankirtan movement. Kali Kali Nama Rupa Krishna Avatar Nama Hoitai Haisava Jagat Nistara. In the age of Kali, Krishna has appeared in the form of the holy name of the Lord. Anyone who associates with Krishna in this form of the holy name can immediately be delivered. It's as good as associating with Krishna directly, and he can be immediately delivered. Understanding this, Srila Prabhupada made his effort, of course, to give everyone the opportunity to come in contact with the pure holy name of Krishna. Anyone who chants Krishna's name even once can actually receive as much benefit. He can be relieved from so many sinful reactions accumulated for so many lives simply by one recitation of the holy name. What to speak of those persons who chant the holy name with faith regularly, chanting the holy name of the Lord. Such is the power of Krishna's name. Therefore, this is our hope. It is the hope for everyone who comes in contact with Krishna's name, who comes in contact with Krishna's devotees, that if somehow or other, as this verse explains, they can become attracted to chanting Hare Krishna. The taste may not be there. And as Rupa Goswami explains later in the Upadeshamrita, he says that for one who's afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, he may not be able to taste, and he may not be able to taste the sweetness of Krishna's name. Although the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord are all naturally sweet, one who's been afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, he cannot taste anything sweet. But it is very wonderful that if one very carefully goes on chanting these names every day, then what happens, even though he's been afflicted by jaundice, what happens is that he gradually becomes cured from his disease, and the natural sweet taste becomes awakened on the tongue. So, of course, carefully goes on chanting these names every day, very carefully and conscientiously goes on chanting the name. Therefore, certainly it is beneficial to come in contact with Krishna's name, to chant Krishna's name, but then one should also ultimately know what is the actual goal of this chanting. Bahu janma kari yari shavana kirtana tabutani pari krishna pari premadana, that if one goes on committing offenses and chanting of the holy name of the Lord, he will never be able to achieve the ultimate goal of this chanting. However, namaskrita, not as the verse, no. In the Padma Purana, it says the chanting of Hare Krishna is recommended for those who are committing offenses. Because even though they may be committing offenses, if they go on chanting in the holy name of the Lord, gradually they will become freed from those offenses. So, our emphasis should always be to, once having come in contact with the holy name of the Lord, is to always stay in the association of devotees and to continue chanting the holy name of the Lord and to look for the opportunities, as much opportunities as possible, to increase one's taste and one's attraction for hearing the glories of the holy name of the Lord and for chanting Hare Krishna in association of devotees of the Lord. And also to be very, very careful to avoid the offenses committed in the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. This is what Srila Prabhupada is explaining his real atonement in this verse that we spoke about, that a sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world, and therefore Prabhupada explains that the best method of atonement, the best method of being able to control the mind and control the senses, control the tongue and to control the anger, is to clean the heart from the sinful desires that are there within the heart. Simply by discharging devotional service and chanting the holy name of the Lord, just as the sun dissipates the fog by the rays, in the same way the seeds of sinful desires can be cleansed from within the core of the heart, so they will not revive again. Anyways, I've covered a lot of points, and I tried to summarize the story of Ajamil, although there are a lot more details that I didn't go into. But I wanted to somehow come to the emphasize the most important element is that the best process for cleaning the heart is Chaitodapana Majanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirapana, is to cleanse the heart from all the dust accumulated for the years together by the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, which is what Srila Prabhupada came to give us as Lord Chaitanya's representative. And we should remain faithful to that process and pray for the opportunity to simply be able to go on chanting the holy name of the Lord in this life. Srila Prabhupada oftentimes quotes the verse, Janadapi suni chena torori vasi hishtana amani namandanena kirtaniya sadhari, that one can chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking himself to be lower than the straw on the street, devoid of all sense of false prestige and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to emphasize that this verse from the Sikshastika prayers of Lord Chaitanya is the Siddha Pranali for all Gaudiya Vaishnavas. It is the means for perfections. The means for achieving his perfection is simply if we can go on chanting continuously the holy name, if we're very careful to always stay in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw on the street, devoid of sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others, not demanding respect for oneself. In that state of mind, Lord Chaitanya himself says, just like a tree may be drying up, and it will never ask anybody for water, and if somebody comes and breaks the tree or the branch, the tree will never complain. In the same way, we should become more tolerant than a tree. And we should also, Lord Chaitanya says that we should be very careful to not, if somebody comes and does something to us, we should not try to become vengeful in any way and try to bring suffering to others. We should accept it ultimately as the will of the Lord. And the other day we were speaking, I think it was in Tawako, we were quoting the verse of a devotee that is described in the Bhagavatam, Tiraskrita vipalabdha kshapta kshipta hatahapi nasya tatpati kurvanti tadbhakta kavayopi hi, that devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even if they are cheated, they're cursed, they're neglected, disturbed, insulted, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. This is real, true humility. And this is true dependence, as Lord Chaitanya had said, that one should take this verse, Trinadapi Sunichina Torodi Vasuhishtana. He says one should string it on the thread of the holy name of the Lord, and he should wear it around his neck as a garland for constant remembrance. This is the proper attitude for chanting the holy name of the Lord, is to chant in this mentality. And therefore, to be forbearing, and never to wish ill upon others, and to be tolerant even in the face of all kinds of adversity. One who actually thinks in this way, he can chant Hare Krishna. It becomes his opportunity to go on chanting becomes his greatest asset in his life by cultivating this mentality. And once having come in contact with the holy name of the Lord, we should try to always stay in contact with the association of the holy name, because it can purify even the most impure place. It can purify even the most impure heart, anyone, even someone like Ajamil, who had committed so many sins in his life, became addicted to intoxication, committed thievery, committed murder, committed so many kinds of sinful activities, still, because of his contact with the Holy Name, he was able to be relieved from all the sinful reactions. So if somebody like Ajamil can have such good fortune, of course Prabhupada warns us, we should not take the story of Ajamil and think, oh, I can go on living like this, and I can just take shelter of this story at the end of my life as well, and think that I will get, probably, I can hope for the same. He said, no, that kind of a mentality is not a very high level of devotional service, and one should not think that he will get the same result, because that's not the way Ajamil was thinking. Ajamil was not thinking, oh, I'm going to chant Narayan's name and I'm going to counteract my sins. He was not committing that offense. And we should not commit that offense by thinking, oh, I can commit all kinds of sinful activities, and then if somebody like Ajamil can be delivered, well, I didn't commit such heinous activities as Ajamil. There's still hope for me. I'll do it, and hope I can be relieved in the same way that he was. But no, we should not be like the foolish person, less intelligent person that Prabhupada explains, who hears and still goes out and does it again. Who hears, who sees that others are suffering and still goes out and does it again. Or to be like the professional sinner who confesses for his sins and goes to church and confesses for his sins and then thinks, okay, I'm clear, I can go about my sinful activities again. This is offense to the holy name of the Lord. But nonetheless, it still gives us hope when we hear this example of Ajamil. It gives us hope that we can become purified by the power of the association of the Holy Name and by the power of the association of the devotees of the Lord. Does anybody have any questions they'd like to ask about anything we've discussed? Pyari, I know, always has questions. No? Okay. Narayan, what is your question, Narayan?
Class recently where it was being discussed how Krishna's mercy is such that he's not judging us for our past behavior or even our past thoughts or even our current behavior or our current thoughts. It's all based on the intention that's in our heart. And that's all that Krishna is really concerned about. Sounds really nice.
Are you looking for a confirmation if that's the actual?
I guess a little bit more of an explanation.
Or an elaboration. Uh-huh. Well, actually, what it comes down to is essentially the point that whoever that person was, the point is making that Krishna is Bhavagrahi. Bhavagrahi Janardana. There's one verse that he says, an illiterate person may say, what is it? Om Vishnaya Namaha. And a Brahmin, he may say, Om Vishnave Namaha. But because the one is proper grammar, the other is not proper grammar, but he says, but Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardana. He overlooks the mistake that was committed in the enunciation of the verse, because he accepts the essence of a person's attitude. He's Bhavagrahi. He accepts the attitude of a person. And I oftentimes quote the verse from Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, where Prahlad is speaking to his friends. And he says, oh, my dear friends, oh, sons of demons. They were all sons of demons. You cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead even if you become an expert Brahmin, even if you become advanced in all knowledge or vast learning, nor by etiquette, nor by austerities, nor by chastity, nor by accepting vows, None of these things can actually awaken the pleasure of the Lord. The Lord is pleased only when one has devotion, unflinching devotion to Him. And without sincere devotional service, everything else is a show. Or as also Prabhupada used to quote the verse, Bhagavad Bhakti hi nasya jati shastram japastaba, apranasiva dehanam mandanam lokaranjanam. That Bhagavad Bhakti hi nasya jati shastram japastaba. That person may take birth in a great family or nation. He may be expert in chanting all kinds of Vedic mantras. He may be execute all kinds of austerities and penances. He may be very learned in the scriptures. But if he doesn't have devotion within his heart, they're like all ornaments like on a dead body. He says they simply serve the concocted pleasures of the general populace. So someone might say, oh yes, I'm very learned, I know many, many verses, I perform all kinds of austerities and penances, and I've taken a great birth. But the real essence is the devotion. Bhagava bhakti hi nasya jati shastram japastava. So Krishna looks at the devotion in the heart. And if somebody has actually come to the point of having surrendered to Krishna and has actually developed his love for Krishna and his attachment to Krishna and is simply trying to please Krishna, then certainly Krishna doesn't consider, because Krishna says, Savadama Purichaja Mamikam Shananam Braja, if you surrender to me, I'll deliver you from all those sinful reactions, do not fear. So, yes, Krishna delivers all the reactions for those who actually are in that state of consciousness. Devotion. But devotion has to be there. I wouldn't necessarily say that, yes, if one tensions, yeah, my intention is, yes, I want to do something for Krishna because I want Krishna to relieve me from the reactions. That's not devotion. But devotion means, yes, I've surrendered to Krishna. And Krishna says, Sarvadharma, all dharmas, I'll deliver you from all sinful reactions, from all other religious, so-called religious activity, by surrendering completely to me. So yes, essentially, that is the most important element, that's the most important ingredient, that Krishna doesn't consider everything else, because he wipes the slate clean for a devotee who's completely surrendered to him. And Prabhupada used to oftentimes quote the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Devarshi bhutaptaninam patinam nankinkaro nayam nicharajan sarvatmariya sharanam sharanyam gato mukuntam parahichakartum. That anyone who completely surrenders to Krishna, he's no longer a debtor, nor is he obliged to anyone else. He's not obliged to the sages, he's not obliged to the forefathers, he's not obliged to humanity, he's not obliged to the demigods. He's not obliged to anyone else, because he surrendered to Krishna. All his other obligations are taken care of by surrender to Krishna. But sometimes devotees, they hear this verse and they think, I'm a devotee, I'm not obliged to anybody else. They try to take the, you know, we used to think that way. I know, devotee, it's not, we don't have to worry about the law, we don't have to worry about, you know, this or that. No. Actually, Krishna, it's the verse specifically states that anyone who's completely surrendered to Krishna, if we're not completely surrendered to Krishna, we may be thinking, I don't feel any obligation to this. And at the same time, we don't feel any obligation to Krishna either. And therefore we think, yeah, well, I just want to avoid it. You know. So again, it's, yes, it's for those who've completely surrendered, they're no longer debtors. But if they're not completely surrendered, they have to be careful how they apply such verses of the Bhagavatam or such statements in the scriptures. And they have to act for gradual purification. Yeah?
And then if someone had a sincerity to move in that direction,
yes, Krishna takes it. Yes. If somebody has that sincerity, if he's sincerely praying, and if he's truly sincerely trying to avoid, and even he may have some difficulty, even he may fall at some point, as we quoted that verse before, but that anyone who's once surrendered to Krishna, he'll never lose And it'll always be helped by Krishna from within. Prabhupada always used to use that example that as long as one is facing the sun, everything is bright. But when you turn your back to the sun, you see darkness. So it doesn't make any difference if we're here, we're there, we're there. As long as we're facing the sun, we're always endeavoring to please the Lord. Then, tesham satatam yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam krish, by our constant endeavors to overcome the difficulties that we may be endeavoring, Krishna will help us to come to Him. But it's when we turn our back to the sun, we see darkness, we see our shadow. But between ourselves and the sun, there's no darkness. But we have to turn away from the sun. So in the same way, we should be very careful to not surrender to Maya. One may slip and one may fall. Apichet Sudaracharo Bhajate Mamanya Bhak. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he may, even a person who's on the path of devotional service, he may apparently commit some abominable action. But if he's rightly situated in his determination, he still should be considered to be saintly. Because there's a difference between accidental slip and fall and then deliberate slipping and falling. We already talked about that before. So in the same way, if a devotee understands, yes, I'm weak. Hridaya dalbalyam means there's still some weakness of heart. I slip from time to time. You know, but he doesn't give up. He's not envious of Krishna. And he goes on, sincerely trying to serve Krishna, making the effort to overcome whatever difficulties he may have. Certainly Krishna will help that person to overcome the difficulties. He doesn't blame Krishna for his shortcomings. He doesn't blame Krishna for his suffering. He doesn't blame others for his difficulties that he encounters in his life. He knows, I'm still weak. I need help. Right? I need help. I need mercy. I need to take shelter of those who have strength. I need to take shelter of Krishna in the form of his name. I need to pray to Krishna for help, for his mercy, because I know I can't do it alone. One who thinks in that way, but certainly he'll get help. Krishna certainly sees the intent, the purpose, and he'll help him to overcome. He may slip and fall, but he'll be able to overcome. There's a difference between Hridaya dalbalyam, weakness of heart, and then, of course, of what we described before, where one offensively, deliberately, tries to counteract his sins by chanting the holy names of the Lord. Shudabhakti? We have Shudabhakti, you're all set.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much. Just I was wondering that as you were talking about the tolerance and how we can become humble while people chanting. So like in a day-to-day situations, we are trying to be practicing Krishna consciousness in our background. But whenever there is a instigate or you know there is a situation where it just provokes you to become angry or upset and somebody tries to you know go on irritating you something like that and you try to tolerate it but it's to some extent you tolerate but
can I ask just a question before you go on? Somebody's deliberately trying to agitate you or you're continuously agitated by something that they're doing? Although they may not be deliberately.
But my mind always gets agitated and I become very anxious. So how, like when we are trying to practice, we are trying to become humble, how I can imbibe that mood of being tolerant and still be humble. And so it's a practical thing. So I always try my best, but I lose sometimes.
Well, until it actually becomes natural to be humble, we have to practice it. It's our natural state. Prabhupada, what is that verse in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam? All the good qualities of the demigods, such as... Yashasti Bhakti Bhagavacha Kinchana Savayagunai Statra Samasate Sura Harava Bhaktasya Mahagato Manorate Nasati Davato Bihi. Yes. All the good qualities will automatically manifest in the devotee who's fully engaged in devotional service. So, and Prabhupada emphasized that, yes, that's our natural quality, is to have all of these qualities. But in our conditioned state, they're not naturally manifest. They're still covered by our conditioning. So the only thing we can do is practice tolerance. We have to practice it at the same time. At least with our intelligence, we should understand it's a quality that we need to develop. And especially when we see something repeatedly manifesting to us again and again and again that we have a hard time dealing with, then it gives us the at least an internal understanding that we know what we have to pray for, because we can't become humble by our own efforts. It's not like there's a humble switch you can just turn on the humble switch and all of a sudden from that day on you're humble. You know, it means we have to understand that if we want humility and tolerance to manifest, then we need Krishna's mercy for it to manifest, and therefore at least we know what to pray for. Please give me strength to become tolerant in the face of all kinds of adversities. Give me strength to become tolerant in the face of this person who apparently is doing something deliberately, I think it's deliberately, again and again. and then the other thing is that we practice it and we pray for it, and then it was something else I was going to say, but I forgot what it was. I don't know, it slipped my mind. Tolerance. And there was something else we're going to say in relationship to tolerance.
To become humble, like.
I think once you surrender, there's no reason to.
Easily said than done, though, isn't it?
Every time it happens.
What's that?
That's the North Pole. Every time it happens, you remind yourself that I'm surrendering and someone is taking care of me, so I don't have to take care of every situation.
Yeah. In other words, if we're completely surrendered, it doesn't happen, obviously. But when it keeps on surfacing again and again and again, obviously we're not surrendered.
It's like when gold is
being. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. I remember what I wanted to say. Prabhupada used to emphasize the point that if there's some quality that we're lacking of, but if we see another person manifesting that quality that we want, then we should serve the person who has that quality. And by serving the person who has that quality, we can actually also develop that quality.
When you get angry, think of Jiva Mataji, not Barry Prabhu.
Is there a purport to that?
And if you want to really get humble, come in front of Barry Prabhu, he will make you humble.
Yeah. Hey, when something keeps on happening again and again, we should try to learn something from it. We should try, why is this happening to me again and again? The tendency is it's happening again and again because you're doing it to me again and again. That's the tendency, is to think
okay,
like
yeah,
that.
But you're a slow learner. You're not learning it.
Huh? You're a slow learner.
It's like testing.
Yeah, you have to see it as something to be learned and an opportunity to pray for help. You know.
Or it could be my anarthas are coming, because sometimes like analogy is like when gold is being getting into ornamented, all the bad things they surface upon. So all my conditioning is coming out and towards purification. So the other people around me are helping me to get purified.
Well, if you could see it like that, then...
Yeah, but I react. That's the problem. I don't want to react.
That means you're not seeing it like that.
I should see it.
But sometimes,
yeah. Sometimes I
just give it.
Yeah.
So, you have to...
practice.
I could meet something that's very, very heavy, if you're ready to hear it.
Yes, I want to.
It's from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Yeah, sometimes when people hear this, it's Amritavani. Where is it? Here it is, Amritavani. It's a question that's being answered. Is anger toward those envious? I think I read this. I read this at the birthday party. Wasn't it at the birthday party that was out in the
park
last year? This year?
This year.
Yeah. Yeah, I read it. Huh? Oh, anyways, I read it.
Krishanki's birthday party?
Yeah, Krishanki.
That's right, it's Krishanki's birthday party. I'll read it again. We should display anger towards those who are envious of devotees. This is a particular limb of devotional service. A lack of anger against blasphemers is unjustified, but we need to understand who is actually envious of devotees. Those who do not serve the Supreme Lord, the Supersoul, and most blissful friend of all living entities do not benefit themselves, but instead invite trouble by their envy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Such people are branded as envious, and we should not show them mercy. These people become intoxicated by worshipping materialists. We should both ignore them and display our anger toward them. But before that, we have to see whether we ourselves are envious of devotees. Whether we ourselves are actually serving Krishna, or are we serving something else on the pretext of serving Krishna? How much are we attached to Krishna? Are we trying to enjoy the objects meant for Krishna's enjoyment? I think that my enjoyment-prone material body is fiercely envious of Krishna and his devotees, because instead of thinking constantly of Krishna's lotus feet and happiness, I am busy worrying about my own happiness, blaspheming others and looking for faults. I do not look at myself at all. I am such an offender at the feet of devotees that I should first learn to display anger toward myself. I am so envious of devotees that I should beat myself with shoes simply to purify myself. Then I can set an example for others and sincerely engage in the service of Hari, Guru, and the Vaishnavas. I must remember that everyone is worshipping Hari but me. I am unable to do so. I should also remember that I may die at any moment. So first we should show anger toward our own sinful propensities, such as our desire for profit, adoration, and distinction, and our propensity to cheat others. We must correct ourselves first. Otherwise, we cannot correct others. Then we have to correct those who are related to us, who are envious of the spiritual master, Krishna, and who are pulling us toward material enjoyment by tempting us. This is the secret of success.
I'll give her the shoe, Mahat.
Now that's a friend.
That kind of perfectly
describes me.
In some countries, that's considered a major offense, isn't it? Throwing shoes at somebody? Yeah. Everybody start throwing their shoes.
I mean, that definitely will help me.
You'll learn not to ask questions.
No. He said your own shoe. So you tell everybody else that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said my own shoe. You know.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. With you, I mean, like, your visits to Hartford keeps us enlivened and,
tolerant.
Who's bothering you? Let me know.
He's taking this to heart. He'll take care of him or whoever it is. So, can we just have one more kirtan?
Sure.
Okay. All right.